This is Radio Boston. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Sasha Pfeiffer. It's Black Friday afternoon, so statistically speaking, a good many of you have already done some damage on the old credit card by now. You're finishing up at the Dedham Mall or the Wrentham Outlets, and you'll probably be home in a couple hours making a leftover turkey sandwich with a bunch of shopping bags at your feet. And probably next week, the November bill will come in the mail. And depending on the extent of your indulgences down on Newbury Street or wherever, you may be tempted to break into that eggnog a little early. Well, when that happens to you, imagine how Kelly Space feels. Last year, she graduated from Northeastern University in Boston with a degree in sociology and about $200,000 in student loan debt. $200,000 for a bachelor's. An intemperate holiday shopping season is one thing, but how do you start to dig yourself out from that? Well, Kelly's come up with a creative solution. She's accepting donations. Her website is 200thou.com, and as of this recording, she's raised about $2,000 there so far. Now, Kelly joins me now on the line from her parents' house in New Jersey, where, I guess not surprisingly, she's living right now. So, Kelly, 1% down, huh?
Yeah, only 99 to go.
Yeah. So let's back up a little bit here. Tell us about yourself. You're the first in your family to go to college?
Yes, I was. I was the first in my immediate and extended family to go to college. And it had been expected since I can remember that I would go to the best college that granted admission to me. And it just so happened that when I was 18 applying for school, Northeastern University was the best school.
Did you have a couple of options? Was that your big one?
It was Northeastern and Fordham were the two, quote-unquote, best schools. I'd gotten into King's College of New York. I hadn't really heard much of that school and didn't do my research on it, and it wasn't much cheaper. And I also applied to Loyola University Chicago, and I got in there as well. All of them offered me similar financial aid packages. Northeastern just happened to be the best school. And at the time, I wanted to major in psychology. And Northeastern was a liberal arts school, so it fit. It was in Boston. I was getting to live the dream of going away to school, and so I went with it.
How did you consider the issue of cost at that point, or did you at all?
At that point, when I was even applying to schools, my guidance counselor in high school just told me to apply. She even got me fee waivers on the applications in which, you know, it cost $50 to apply to school. She waived the fee for me. So she was she knew that I couldn't even pay the cost of the fees, but still encouraged me to apply to all the schools I wanted to go to and told me not to worry about the cost. Everyone takes loans out. And then my parents and I met with the financial aid advisor at Northeastern once I decided that I did want to go there. She basically told me that they couldn't offer me anything more and to consider other options in the private loan area.
Right. So you've got 200,000 in loans. So you didn't just get those all from the feds. You had to go to private sources as well.
It's 90%, 95% private loans.
And did you consider your choice of major in the context of all of this? Were you thinking, because you said you wanted to major in psychology, you eventually ended up majoring in sociology. Were you thinking, I'll be a clinical psychologist, I'll be a doctor, I can make this money back that way? Or did that not enter your mind at that stage when you were 18?
Honestly, the only thing that entered my mind was going away to school and going to, quote-unquote, the best. It wasn't even the best for a certain major. I wasn't even sure of what I wanted to major in, and I think that was absolutely foolish. Psychology was my fleeting thought. That's how I applied, or that's what I put on my application. But, you know, once I got to school, I changed my major within a month or two, so it really wasn't even based on the major itself. And honestly, because I was under this impression that everyone takes out loans, the cost didn't even cross my mind, which is sad. And it took a couple years for it to do that.
Did it ever cross your parents' mind?
It did, I'm sure. They didn't discuss it with me, probably because I wasn't bringing it up with them. I remember a couple conversations with my parents, them assuring me that they'd probably be able to help me make the payments when I graduated, and don't worry, we'll fix it. You know, maybe they were just being hopeful, and maybe they just didn't want to say no to their daughter, who they perceived to be bright and, you know, the first one going to college, that we all just sort of pushed it to the side.
Well, so you graduated, and then the payments started coming in. What kind of payments are we talking about?
Well, currently I pay $891 a month, I think it just went up to 93.
Okay.
And next November, they'll double to about almost 1,700.
Why will they double?
Well, right now, I'm just on a repayment plan where they've lowered my payments for 2 years, something like a deferment. So 2 years from last November, they will go back to what they normally, quote-unquote, are.
Right. So in a few months, you're looking at $1,700 a month, just about,
yeah,
in student loan payments. And you have a job?
I do.
But nonetheless, not one that would pay enough to make those payments and keep you not living in your parents' house.
Right. I mean,
Which would have to be a pretty well-paying job.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I live at home, as do most of my friends. I have nothing against living at home. I know starting out in the world, you're supposed to. I'm
sure.
Perfectly fine with that. I just can't see anywhere into the future where, you know, these payments aren't there anymore, that I'm not living at home. In 20 years when these payments are over, fine, I can move out, but I will be 43. Like, that's sort of my difference. It's like, I don't need to move out now, but maybe in 10 years I'd like to, and I probably still can't.
Yeah, 43 is a little beyond the bounds of acceptability.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you have no other options, so you turn, of course, to the internet.
Yes, I did. I was inspired a lot by SaveKaren.com, which was maybe 7 or 8 years ago. Karen Bosnack turned to the internet to raise money for some credit card debt that she'd racked up when she got fired from her job. And I thought it was a great idea. And you didn't hear much about it, I think, because the internet maybe wasn't as big then, or like blogs weren't as big then. So her reaction, I think, was much different than the reaction that I've gotten.
So how long has 200thou.com been up?
Me and a friend of mine and my sister created it over the summer and didn't really think anything of it. We weren't really doing anything with it. And one day I was just sort of really frustrated about my loans and emailed a writer from Gawker.com,
mm-hmm,
and sort of spiraled from there.
Okay. So as you mentioned, your story made it to Gawker. It was on Huffington Post. And as is typical for the internet, you were savaged a bit in the comments. And so let me read a couple of these to you. Here's one. It says, I know, here it comes. Can't feel sorry for her based on what I'm reading. She could have worked part-time through college. She could have lived off campus and paid cheaper rent. It just seems absurd that she is now asking people to pay off her loans. And here's another comment. It says, has she never heard of community college, public school? Northeastern may be a pleasant university in a nice town, but it most certainly doesn't have enough prestige to warrant being saddled with $200K of debt. I'm curious if you've gotten into it with people and tried to address any of the specific things. You did work through college, didn't you?
I did. I had several part-time jobs. I haven't actually started responding to any comments because I know that once I start, I wouldn't be able to stop. And I absolutely think that everyone is entitled to their own opinion, and I can see where most of these people are coming from. Hands down, I totally understand, and so I wouldn't want to try to stick up for myself.
Well, another person pointed out, I think more constructively, that they said the Department of Education has redone its loan payback system under the current administration so that you only pay a percentage of what you earn. And that would theoretically give you a much lower payment than the $1,700 that you're looking at right now. On the other hand, that's for federal loans, right?
Yes, that's the income-based repayment plan. I'm not eligible for that. I might be next November if I call Sallie Mae once. I mean, I called them a month or two ago regarding my interest rates once again, and they said they can't do anything right now because I'm currently on a certain plan. And once this plan is up, which is in November, I'm able to call them and hopefully work something else out with them.
Your story, of course, is an extreme example of a very common problem, especially right here in Boston. And the Huffington Post also recently went through some new data, and they compiled a list of the 13 schools that leave their students with the highest average debt loads. And Simmons College, Worcester Polytechnic, and Wheelock College were numbers 7, 8, and 9, respectively. Average debt load there in the mid-40s, a lot less than what you're contending with, but still substantial. So there's a lot of people out there with Kelly's problem, and not all of them might have a story that can elicit those kinds of online donations. So joining us now on the line with some other options is Deanne Lunan with the National Consumer Law Center, which is based right here in Boston. She's the director of their Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. Deanne, thanks so much for coming on Radio Boston.
Sure, you're welcome.
First, I'll back up for a second. How did it come to be that people like Kelly can't declare bankruptcy if they get in way too deep?
That is a huge problem, and it came to be actually for the federal loan program way back in the 1970s when they made it more difficult for students to discharge student loans in bankruptcy, although frankly it was easier than it is now because there were two alternatives to do so. you could wait a certain amount of time, and if you weren't able to pay your loans during that time, then you could have them discharged. Or you could go back to court, basically to bankruptcy court, and prove undue hardship. The rationale for it, honestly, was never well-founded, in my opinion. A lot of it was based on anecdotes of doctors and lawyers going to school and immediately trying to discharge their debt. But it happened nonetheless back in the 70s for federal loans, and then more recently in 2005, they basically put the same restrictions on the private student loans.
That was a result of lobbying efforts, I imagine, from the private student loan industry?
Yes, it was really part of actually a bigger, what they called bankruptcy reform, which was very much industry-driven all the way around.
Let's go back to Kelly's example. She's looking at $1,700 a month in payments. That sounds utterly unfeasible. The Obama administration pushed a lot of student loan reform legislation through recently. Is there anything in there that can help someone like Kelly out?
Yes, there is. And actually, the distinction, again, as Kelly talked about, is between what you can do for the federal loans versus what you can do for the private loans. So for the federal loans, the good news is that there are options like income-based repayment, and you should be able to switch payment plans at any time. So I'm not sure what the problem was there. If you're currently on a different plan with your federal student loans, you call your loan holder, and as long as you qualify for income-based repayment, and qualifying basically means that your income is sufficiently low and your debt level is sufficiently high, then your payments will then be tied to your income. That's the good news. The bad news on the federal loan side is if you don't deal with them, the government can come after you in ways that private creditors can basically only dream of.
tease us with a couple of those.
They can take your tax refunds without first going to court. So they have to give notice, but they don't have to go to court and get a judgment. They can garnish portions of your wages without getting a judgment first. They can even take portions of your Social Security, which for somebody like Kelly might not seem that important because she's so far away from being 60 in her 60s. But one thing about student loans, federal student loans, is that there's no time limits on the collection. So the government can literally come after you forever.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And on the problem then really more in terms of the options is on the private loan side. The good and the bad news is reversed, really, for private student loans. The good news is that the private creditors can't do all the same things to you that the government does if you get into trouble. The bad news is that, for the most part, there's no law that requires those creditors to do anything for you like there is for federal loans. They will negotiate. Sometimes they'll have some provisions in their agreements where they'll give interest-only payment for a short period of time, but it's basically at their discretion.
Well, as we mentioned, the Obama administration has done a lot in the way of student loan reform with some recent legislation. What's your main top three things left that you think need to be done, legislatively speaking, to keep people from Kelly, like getting in the situations they're in?
Well, I think that we need to look at the relief side is one thing and make sure that there are options for people who get into trouble. And that includes bankruptcy reform is a number one thing, at least for the private student loans, although we'd like to see for the federal student loans as well, so that if somebody is really in trouble, they go through the bankruptcy system, you know, they have the other barriers to entry in bankruptcy. Not anybody can just go into bankruptcy, but if you don't have enough assets to pay off your loans or other debts, then you can actually get some relief there.
Kelly, would you contemplate bankruptcy if you had that option?
I have, actually. I went to a lawyer. He told me there's no guarantee, as only some 1% of private loans are discharged in bankruptcy, but that I would still have to pay him $2,000 up front. So there was just no way that I was going to pay that huge fee and possibly not have my loans discharged.
Yeah, well, you got your $2,000 already that you've raised at 200thou.com. So there's that.
It's true. That's awesome.
Just out of curiosity, how are you planning to report that income to the IRS?
Well, I plan on looking into that further and doing it 100% legally. We'll see what happens. It's only been a day.
All right. Kelly Space, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, and best of luck to you. Kelly, her website is 200thou.com, where she's soliciting donations that can go toward repayment on her $200,000 worth of student loan debt that she incurred getting a four-year degree in sociology at Northeastern University. And Deanne Lunin is with the National Consumer Law Center, based right here in Boston, directs their Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. Deanne, thanks so much, as always, for coming on WBUR.
Sure, thank you, and I hope it works out for you, Kelly.
Thank you very much.
And the National Consumer Law Center offers some great advice for people who might find themselves in a situation like Kelly's. We have a link on our website, wbur.org/Boston.